Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
We want to call out our change to our approach on the repayment terms. We're going to make sure that our staff in Countryside understand that producers should be allowed to build those things into their business plan. Having a retirement fund built into this can help ease that generational transfer and help enable us to recruit young farmers and ranchers back to the farm.
FSA Administrator Zach Ducheneau.
Being able to pay for your health insurance from your production income, because FSA can make adjustments to our terms to allow for that, might be able to help them step out of that job that they've got over there in the town 40 miles away because they need the health insurance. They can pay for that for their family on their own terms. He or she might be able to devote more of that time and attention and innovation to their actual ag operation.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Well, it's very interesting. When I was a very young man, I was broke, and I was pestering my dad for money, and he said, "Son, let me show you how to make money."
Chris Swift is founder of Swift Trading Company.
We went up, and he co-signed an account for me at Merrill Lynch. I put on a trade, made enough money to pay my wife's car off and have money in the bank for the first time, and I was hooked at that point. I traded on my own for a couple of years, and then I joined J.C. Bradford & Company in 1991, became a commodity broker, learned the ropes through there, and then became very interested in the livestock markets and agricultural production. As my business grew and my knowledge grew on it, we changed a couple of firms, and we were with Rosenthal Collins Group for a while, and now we clear through ADMIS, and we have become what we consider cattlemen. We generally, when we go after clientele, it's in the cattle business. And the one thing that I learned over the years is that if you're going to be successful in something, you need to, and especially in a commodities, you need to pick a market, learn there everything there is to know about that market, and then you can go after clientele in that market. So I've just entrenched myself in everything that I could learn about it. I visited every cattle producer I could find, went to all the sale barns and walked around in the mud and manure and talked to people, and to this day have just built a very good, sound business on helping individuals manage the price risk that's inherent in livestock production.
And now we're at a perfect storm.
We continue to see cattle production is very cyclical. All throughout my career, I have been told that, and I have seen it, and it's a little bit of a boom and bust type business, some similar to the energy markets there, where it's either really, really good or it's really, really bad, and there's very few times where it's status quo. But we have really become very interested in the last 4 years because we're coming off a major low of excessive building of the herd. When we reached to the 2020 level, we saw a large influx of liquidity come out into the country because of the government spending $3.5 trillion for the COVID relief, and that began to boost the economy, boost cattle production, beef consumption, because people had money now that may not have had that money before. It continued to roll until really just about this summer. Because through the last 2 years, it has been seen by the industry that if we keep killing at this rate, we're going to run out of cattle and run out of beef. So the industry began rationing cattle. They began keeping the price up so high that fewer and fewer people could participate in the industry. To the consumer, we see retail beef prices still at the highest level for 4 years now, again, rationing the consumer from over-consuming and even raising the price that much higher. So interesting how that the industry has been able to do that, and we have increased our imports, we have decreased our exports, and we have started to explore alternative markets in the beef and dairy cross. I find that a very interesting aspect, and as we see more and more investment dollars go into that particular beef dairy cross, we think it's here to stay and will continue to make a very important impact on beef production going forward. So fast forward to today, we've done a lot of things that has helped to control or to reduce that desire or demand to keep running prices up. And seemingly like we may have hit one of those levels where everybody's going to sit back and take just a little bit of breather. See, prices don't decline just a little bit. We're right in the midst of the consumer potentially having to shift again in discretionary spending, because we've not seen hardly any relief in the inflation at all. And that's seemingly what seems to be hampering people more than anything.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Taking place in Kearney, Nebraska is the Nebraska Governor's Ag and Economic Development Summit. I'm Jesse Harding Campbell. With me is the Director of Agriculture for Nebraska, Sherry Vinton. Why don't you tell us a little about this event and some of the conversations that have been happening here?
You bet, Jesse. This is a great event that's held annually. What's a little bit new is during the pandemic, we started holding it together with economic development. And if you think about it, agriculture and economic development go together like peas and carrots, and it's been a smashing success. This year, we've had more people in attendance than ever. We've had over 600 people here, and there's a lot of buzz about what it's going to take to keep the brain drain from happening in Nebraska. We've talked about housing. We've talked about childcare. We've talked about education. And we've actually talked about the good paying jobs that are going to be created by the bioeconomy and by selling Nebraska's commodity crops as value added products.
Can you expand a little more on bioeconomy and what that means? It's definitely been a focus of discussions here this week.
Sure. You know, in my mind as Director of Agriculture, the bioeconomy is nothing new. It's what farmers and ranchers have always done. We've always used our resources in the most efficient manner that we can to raise a needed and necessary crop. But in this new world, for everybody else, the bioeconomy is taking our commodities and making it into all the things that people need in a renewable and sustainable fashion.
The department is fresh off coming off a trade mission from Indonesia. Tell us about that experience.
We had a wonderful trip to Indonesia. We had over 20 people with us representing all segments of agriculture, industry, and education. Of course, some of our biggest exports are going to be soybeans, distillers grains, and beef to Indonesia. We were very fortunate. We met with feed mills. We met with the university there. And we had a gentleman with us from Halal Transactions of Omaha, and that's a new requirement, not just for beef, but for all products going into Indonesia that are going to be required coming in October this year. And he's actually the largest certifier in the United States of America. So this is a great opportunity for Nebraska to sell products there. There's over 280 million people in Indonesia, and they're a very young demographic with growing income. And that's why we're strategically targeting that country. We have great trading partners in Japan and Korea, Mexico and Canada. But as we've learned with some of our other trading partners, you don't want to be reliant on any one country too much.
In Indonesia, what were some of the conversations that were being had? What were some of the questions that they had for the Nebraska delegation?
They're very interested in how our crops are produced. They're actually very interested in being sustainable themselves. They want to know what our production methods are like, what they can learn from us. Indonesia is very interested in a partnership, not just being used as a trading partner. You know, they were colonized many years ago, and so we were celebrating that sort of 70th anniversary of a partnership with this country. So that was a great discussion that we had. They're also very interested in Nebraska soybeans. They're very high quality, and they use them for their tempeh production.
Beef is obviously a big export. What has been happening this year with beef exports in Nebraska?
I am so excited to say that we have just set a record. We have exported more beef in the first 6 months this year than ever before, and Nebraska is leading the nation in exports, and that's something to say. We've had a strong dollar. You know, beef isn't cheap right now, but there's incredible demand for protein.
And that was the Nebraska Director of Agriculture, Sherry Vinton, here from the Nebraska Governor's Ag and Economic Development Summit. Reporting from Kearney, Nebraska, I'm Jesse Harding Campbell.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
We know how important our dairy industry is to the state of Illinois' economy, and we're grateful for the work that you do, and certainly here in this dairy building.
Illinois Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton.
And then finally, I want to say again to Governor J.B. Pritzker, who has been such an incredible advocate for making sure that we implement policies that uplift and strengthen our agriculture industry and create a strong pipeline for more young people to enter the industry. So I'll just be very quick, because I know we want to get to the unveiling of this butter cow. But everything that I love is right in this building. The butter cow and ice cream. And I am so excited that we are on the verge of kicking off the 2024 State Fair. Director Costello is right. I always say it. Ag connects us all. look at how the state fair brings us together, gives us an opportunity to share an ice cream cone, to create memories with our children and our families, and that's what we're doing over the next 10 days, all while uplifting our state's largest industry.
And opening the Illinois State Fair on Thursday, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker.
Last year, we saw record-breaking attendance. More than 700,000 visitors visited the fair over 11 days. $7.6 million in revenue. That, too, is a record. I know that this year will be a tremendous success once again. In many ways, it already is. With this year's theme, it's showtime. We're highlighting the events, the entertainment, the fun that captures the spirit of our great fair. Today and throughout our state fair, we honor our agriculture industry and express our shared hopes and dreams for our future, not just in agriculture, but as a state. Since our state's founding 204 years ago, we've been an agricultural powerhouse. We boast 26 million acres of farmland with roughly 71,000 farms. We're home to the top six counties in the country for corn production, with McLean County leading at more than 70 million bushels of corn produced. We also lead the nation with the top 10 counties for soybean yield nationally. A special shout-out, of course, to Tazewell County, which is number one with about 74 bushels per acre. Yeah. I'm so grateful for this opportunity to once again showcase our farmers' extraordinary contributions to our state, to our nation, and to the world. Over the next 11 days, as hundreds of thousands of people from across the state and across the country, even a few from around the world, they'll come here and they'll see our fair and all of what it has to offer. So I want to give them a warm welcome to the middle of everything. I hope to see many of you throughout the fair as we celebrate our booming agriculture industry. Visit our best-in-the-nation butter cow in the dairy building. Make sure you get a cone while you're there. Watch as our youth from Illinois 4-H serve as our Twilight Parade's Grand Marshal. And try all of our phenomenal fair treats. Thank you all. Let's make this fair the best it's ever been and make it a part of your summer every single year. And now, without further ado, let's cut the ribbon and open the gates on the 2024 Illinois State Fair.
Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker at the opening of the Illinois State Fair, celebrated almost every year since 1853. It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
If we think about the whole policymaking process.
Now that the Chevron doctrine's been overturned, Brad Lubin, associate professor, extension policy specialist at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln.
First, you fight for policy in the legislative process. You lobby Congress. You work on Capitol Hill to influence policy development and legislative language. And then there's sort of the adage, what you can't legislate, you regulate, which is to say you're trying to implement or influence the rules for how legislation is implemented and the rules for how programs might work. And then there's the adage, what you can't regulate, you litigate, which is to say we typically see it, we take it to court and we test legally whether that rule complies with, meets the intent and so forth of the legislation. So we often sort of fight these issues at every branch of government and every avenue for political discourse. What Chevron used to mean, at least, was that in the absence of sort of clear and understanding of intent and implications, that the courts would defer to the federal government agencies and rely on their expertise to interpret what was reasonable. The fact that the Chevron doctrine has been refuted doesn't explicitly say who is responsible now for interpreting. What it means, however, is that probably every branch of government has more of a responsibility or more of a challenge in writing clearer rules or clearer language in legislation and still making a reasonable interpretation and proposed system of rules and regulations in the executive branch, and now also interpreting what those rules and what that legislation means in any court case brought before the federal court system. So instead of deferring to the federal agencies, it may well be now that all three branches are tasked more with trying to interpret what was intended and what's reasonable and what gets evaluated legally in that manner.
It's not going to be smooth sailing. Actually, there could be choppy waters.
Federal agencies still have to be careful about interpreting that language and determining what intent or what's reasonable given the language that's is sometimes ambiguous. And then courts still have to ultimately interpret that and gauge the legality of it. But go back to the first case up on Capitol Hill, it probably means that the future legislation has to be more specific and more detailed to ensure that that the language and the instructions or the intent are clearly spelled out. That's often a challenge. Well, number one, it's more extensive and maybe takes more time. It also can disrupt the political process, whereas sometimes policy moves very, very quickly, and it's most efficient to write language that effectively says the federal agency has the authority and the expectation to implement programs as needed to address this issue, like a disaster, for example. The money might be needed very, very fairly urgently. The language might be written in 2 days and move through Congress in short order. I wouldn't expect Congress to be sitting down long enough to write the exact specifics of how it should be implemented. That's where discretion is really going to be still expected and required from the federal agency.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Taking place in Kearney, Nebraska is the Nebraska Governor's Ag and Economic Development Summit. Reporting, I'm Jesse Harding Campbell. With me is Governor Jim Pillen. Tell us a little bit about this event.
Well, this is really one of the fun things that you get to do as governor is bring Nebraskans together that love this place, care about this place, and we talk about getting things done. This is a very pragmatic, straightforward conference, and we're talking about competing and we're talking about action plans so that we can grow Nebraska. And the goal is to make sure that we appreciate how extraordinary the people in Nebraska are. What's the greatest thing about Nebraska? It's the people. And then we have this extraordinary pot of gold, the Ogallala Aquifer. It's really important that all Nebraskans start thinking about our aquifer from 7 generations perspective, because we have to become, we've done great the last 60 years, but we have to be proactive, not reactive, for the future, because there's going to be extraordinary, extraordinary opportunities that could put unwarranted demands on. So I think it's just really, really important that we bring people together. And then, you know, we talked about threats. It's really important that we start getting ourselves educated a little bit more. We quite honestly live a little bit in a bubble in Nebraska. We just can't comprehend some people's egregious thoughts about what we do and how we feed the world and save the planet, and they try to paint a story that's 180 degrees opposite. So it's important that we're all aware of all that.
Conversations that take place here at the event, what do you hope happens after everyone goes home?
Yeah, well, what's really important that we do is we go home and then we're inspired to take action. Example, housing. Gigantic, right? Housing, child care, critical in every community across the state. Well, what's important is that community leaders go home and come up with plans that doesn't rely on government. We, the state of Nebraska, can provide some seed money, but we have to invest. And as I have said, let's start thinking about investing in workforce housing. It's kind of like when you bought your first farm. Whenever you buy a farm, it never makes economic sense. That's how we have to look at workforce housing, where we come together as community members, put money in a fund, develop and build workforce housing, and recognize we're not going to get a return for 15 years. The communities that do that, they're going to thrive, they're going to explode, they're going to continue to grow and have incredible quality of life. because there's incredible careers for everybody across state. So we have to get housing. There's water. We got to talk about how we can become proactive with water and start measuring what we do with water, because if we more we measure it, the less we use and the less expense we have. And then, of course, we have the aquifer for seven generations, talking about our people, our greatest resource, stop the brain drain and make sure that we are recruiting folks to come to Nebraska, because what do we have? We're the safest place in the world to live, for crying out loud. Let's not take that for granted. Last year I was at Burwell for a ribbon cutting, and I said, you know, we're the safest place. I don't ever lock my pickup. And the mayor of Burwell says, of course we don't, because somebody might need it. That's what we got to be talking about, because our young people want to live here, and they know it's the safest, and we got to make sure they can know what extraordinary careers that they have.
I've been talking with Governor Jim Pillen from his Nebraska Governor's Ag and Economic Development Summit in Kearney, Nebraska. Reporting, I'm Jesse Harding Campbell.
Thanks, Jesse. Also from Nebraska, Congressman Mike Flood introducing the Sustainable Aviation Fuel Information Act, directing the US EIA to include fuels in their weekly and monthly reports. It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
And how many people have you heard come find the microphone today or this week, understanding, wanting to talk about that? What we've gotten is people coming behind the microphone and not telling the truth.
Nation has officially hit $35 trillion in debt. Arizona Representative David Schweikert.
We all want to protect Social Security. The way you protect Social Security is you know the math and how it actually works. We're on track in a decade to double senior poverty. But God forbid any of us tell the truth about math, because the truth gets you unelected and a bunch of really angry ads at home. So this place runs around and avoids telling the truth.
And that income tax you pay, it's well spent.
My math basically says this year, 45.68%. Of all the income tax collections, receipts, your government takes in, just cover the cost of interest. I'd been coming behind the microphone and saying, hey, interest in 2024, this fiscal year, would be somewhere around a little less than $1.2 trillion. I apparently have that wrong. It's probably going to come in about $1,140 to $60 billion. Either way, I'm off a fraction. But 45.68% of every dime we're collecting in your income tax now just pays interest. And I've tried to say over and over and over at home and other places, and you get people to just stare at you and go, huh?
And if you're not concerned, for sure, the next generation will not be thankful.
How much discussion have you heard, anyone that's been listening to these microphones this week, heard people like me, which maybe I'm just an idiot, for actually giving a damn. Get behind these microphones and actually walk through the math and explain there's a way we keep our promises. There's a way we meet our obligation for the earned benefits. There's a way to make this work. You don't have a lot more time to keep screwing around, but if you do it in the next 3-4 years, this is another American century. I have my 8-year-old sitting over here. I also have a 2-year-old. My wife's exactly my age. Yes, I'm pathologically optimistic. The math says her generation will be the first generation to live poorer than her parents. Great morality, guys. Very proud of us. And anyone that listens to my diatribes here, thank you. I think this is almost like my therapy session, because I get angry all week long listening to absurdity and people saying things that mathematically have no basis in fact.
The big issue? Demographics.
100% of the debt, and this makes everyone angry, and it's factual. 100% of the U.S. debt from today through the next 30 years is demographics. Huh? What's demographics? And this is your country's leadership. It's demographics. We got old as a society, and we didn't set aside the resources to keep our promises. And since 1990, U.S. fertility has been falling. I won't use the word collapsing. But last year, we estimate 2023 1.63%, maybe 1.62% fertility, meaning the United States now has fewer children than much of Europe. Now tell me how I build a pay-as-you-go system to keep our promises to those who paid into Social Security, those who paid into Medicare. And remember, the Medicare taxes you pay only cover about 38-40%.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
First thing that we should call out is our distress borrower set-aside program.
FSA Administrator Zach Ducheneau.
You may be familiar with our disaster set-aside program, and this is modeled after that program, but it is based on what we have learned doing the Inflation Reduction Act, Section 006, distress borrower work for the last couple of years. Oftentimes what the producers need is just a little breathing room, just that payment moved to the back of the note. We have the ability to do that for producers that are on our portfolio as of September 25th. We're calling it distress borrower set aside. It's going to be a low doc version of a simplified primary loan servicing opportunity. What's unique about this particular aspect of our services is you don't need to have a natural disaster to trigger it. It's lower documentation. And when we do set that payment aside, instead of accruing interest at the already established rate, it's going to accrue interest at 0.125%. So we're really setting aside a payment, and it's not going to balloon on you in a way that jeopardizes your operation as you're coming to the end of that term.